You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. We're your hosts, Cassie Soliday and
Megan Ferguson.
Megan is a director at Mercury Filmworks in Ontario, Canada. We chatted about her journey in the last episode with a full interview, so check that out to learn more about her.
Yeah, and today we're going to be chatting about blacklisting.
Dun-dun-dun. I'm so excited to get controversial right now.
I know, it is a hot topic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are afraid of it when they first, even when they are in school, they're kind of afraid of it. And then when you get in the industry, you're like, I don't want to get blacklisted.
Yeah, which is too bad because I really like, you know, black is a shade and I wear a lot of it. And I really don't think it should be taken negatively like this. So
definitely not. It looks good on many of us.
Yeah. Yeah, it is definitely a word that's popped up a lot for me in recent years when talking to students and new hires, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What is like the thing that comes up most when talking about it? Like, why are they afraid of being blacklisted?
I think it's, I don't know, it's like this thing, it's like the animation boogeyman, where it's like, it shouldn't be the animation boogeyman because we have plenty of other problems that are way more real, you know, than the blacklist. But in general, like, it is, people are afraid that they are going to be barred from the industry. And I think that's it in the core, right? It's not just about saying something wrong or maybe like messing up an opportunity at a studio or rubbing someone the wrong way. It's about being blacklisted. It's being barred. It's about your name being like dragged through the mud and you're not allowed in anymore. Is sort of the vibe I get from people.
Kind of what I've like, because I was definitely afraid of that when I first got in and before I got in. But I feel like, so this is my definition of what blacklist is, like,
yeah,
right, me right now, is that it doesn't exist industry-wide. There are companies that do keep HR notes, so if you mess up and get fired or do something that was not cool, like, it will be noted. And that it's more about keeping a good reputation, you know, doing great work and being great to work with. So that's what I've told myself. Mm-hmm. But I've really loved your opinion about it because it goes deeper than that. And I would love you to just go into it.
I think you're totally right. And I think it's good to be like, to start off being realistic, right? It's an industry. Like, you're going to hear from teachers and people that it's a small industry. So people talk, da, da, da. But I think one thing that we really need to start putting in perspective is the fact that there is nothing about the process that's different really from other industries. And has there been a time that people have been blacklisted and no studio will hire them in their area? I can't say for certainty, but I've never heard of it. And if it did happen, that's an exception, not a rule. And honestly, with the age of internet, I think it's not going to happen if it did. I've never heard of anybody being blacklisted. I have heard of people who, like, you know, maybe one studio doesn't want to hire them back, but like, no one goes out of their way to bar people from stuff. And I think the problem I have with the term blacklisting and people being afraid of it is it seems like it's got more weight than it needs to have.
Mm-hmm. It's a very scary word.
It is. And it makes it seem like a physical object, right? Like, it's
this, yeah, yeah,
list with names. And if you're on it, Santa doesn't come. Like, you know, it, and I am just from the Ottawa industry, so please take my opinion with a grain of salt. Like, I am just one person who works in one area of the industry, and this is just my experience. But I dislike the amount of weight that we put on students to not be assholes. Because for me, I shouldn't have to tell you to not be an asshole. I'd rather give people the benefit of the doubt that they are not an asshole. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, what I find is that, you know, the first thing we're told about the industry is that it's a small place. Like, I don't remember hearing a blacklist when I was in school. which was like, what, this was 14 years ago. Like, I don't recall it, but I do recall being told the industry is small and that the industry talks and the person beside you could be your supervisor or your boss one day. So don't be an asshole. And I think that's, you know, a valid thing to say, like when you're in school, you know, because, you know, some people in school are still young and you're still figuring yourself out and maybe there's cliques or whatever. So it's good to put a human element to it and go, yeah, you're going to be working with these people, just to let you know.
Yeah. As someone who has worried most of my life that I was being an asshole, I feel like if you have to check in with yourself to ask yourself, am I being an asshole right now? You're probably not an asshole in general.
Exactly. Most people, like the animation industry attracts sensitive introverts for the, like, you know, and some boisterous people, some very like fun, energetic people. But like, for the most part, the people who come into this industry are incredibly sweet. And I would rather give people the benefit of the doubt and maybe have like, yeah, one person maybe rub me the wrong way. But to put the weight on it, to tell students to go, okay, but when you go in the industry, make sure not to be an asshole. All that does is the people who aren't think they have to go out of their way to be nicer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it, even that puts a weight on people saying, don't be an asshole when you go out to the industry, just be a good person, have a good reputation. What you're telling those people by putting the weight on those words is that they're not there yet and they have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because otherwise why mention it? Why put the weight on it?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of weight being thrown at students. Like, you know, the teachers, of course, want them to get work as soon as possible and be successful. But I don't know, it was so stressful after graduation. And it just feels like all of these things that are put on the students, it carries with them into their jobs when they finally break in.
Yeah.
And that fear just kind of bubbles up. Can you talk more about that process? Because a lot of the students that you've talked with over the years are working now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what I found. Because when I was working, and like, you know, I've worked mostly on the animation side. So this is purely like for people who come in animation. But, you know, other departments have the same problem where like, one of the biggest things that I have a hard time with the new students coming in has nothing to do with their skills. Their skills are there. They can do the job. But to get them to just hand something in that's not perfect is hard. To get them to communicate that they're struggling and need help is hard. Even though they know deep down that like it's okay to ask for help, there's this fear that, no, I'm in the job, I should know, and it's going to reflect poorly on me if I say something or if I ask for help. I'm going to show my weakness, and it means I need to get better and I need to sacrifice because my teacher said that I have to be passionate about this job and da da da. You know, and the way they're working has nothing to do with the job. It has everything to do, because like the job expectations, like, and I make it clear, when you come and work on my crew, my number one expectation is that you communicate with me if you're struggling. Mm-hmm. And even with that upfront said, I have to hunt people down and go, do you need help? And most of the time they go, I'm okay. And I go, but really? And, you know, it's a process. It takes a long time to get people to open up and to actually ask for help. And a lot of them are afraid of how it reflects on them. And so the fear comes out in like a bunch of different ways. But a lot of it has to do with like the communication and, man, the amount of people that think they're going to be fired within the first week, the first month. Oh, I didn't hit my quota. What does that mean? Like anything. And I'm just like, where does this fear come from? Like, why? Well, like, I had a chance to talk with the people I was training and be like, why are you so afraid? And that's when like some of the blacklist stuff came up, because people were afraid of being of failing or of saying something wrong and being blacklisted. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, but it's stopping you from actually good things. It's so ingrained. And it's not just blacklisting. Blacklisting just happens to be like the more familiar word.
Definitely.
But really, it is the fear of failure. And blacklisting, I think, sort of maybe it just represents that because it's the ultimate failure. Like you're barred. You did something wrong. You're not allowed back in, right?
Yeah, you can't even try again in that case.
Yeah. So it's sort of like this, I don't know, unintentional symbol of the end. And it's one factor of many, ultimately, which is, but the core problem is fear. The core problem isn't blacklisting. The core problem is the fear we have of failure, being barred, not succeeding, doing all this work for nothing. For so many people, animation's like all they have. Like this career is all they have. They worked so hard to get here, and now they're here, and we're gonna cling on to it because we earned it. And it's scary. It's scary to think that it takes so much work to get here, but you could be blacklisted.
Yeah. What do you think the solution is to combat this fear?
I think schools, I'm coming for you. Ha 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 ha. I think, and there's some, okay, disclaimer. There's so many great teachers. I had some great teachers. And there are teachers that I know and I respect, but I also don't agree with their messages. And I think a lot of we do have to look at our education system, because that is the first step for the students to understand what the industry is. And the industry, everyone who teaches knows what the industry is like. They know the challenges. They know it is an industry of overworking and being underpaid. They know it's an industry of like crazy deadlines and contract work and it not being stable and all these roadblocks. They've lived through it. In fact, they've probably lived through the worst of it, right? Like for a lot of people who have just started, and like I've been incredibly blessed. I've had solid work. But a lot of the people who have been in the industry for years and years and years have experience some ups and downs, and they should know better than anyone what it's like. And I find that the way that they are preparing the students, I feel like it's coming from a good place. I don't think anyone's setting out to inject fear in their students and basically set them on the path to expensive therapy. I don't think anyone's doing that.
Yeah, I also think like sometimes when people get bad advice, they might have caught a person on like a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
Projecting their own fears. I've heard of a lot of that too.
Yeah, well, because they're people. Like teachers are people. Yeah. You know, yeah, and exactly. And but the problem is though, and I'm incredibly conscious of this, is that I'm a person, but I'm in a position of power. When you're a teacher, even if you are teaching people who are in their early 20s and they're adults, their brains are still developing and they are in a place of vulnerability because they are learning from you. They are looking at you as someone who is their first entry point into the industry. I'm sorry, you took that job. Yes, you are a person. You have power over those people. And your words have weight. My words have weight. I am aware of that now speaking, right? Like, and I have to accept the consequences for what I say if I say something with this weight that is going to affect people. I can't go, oh, you should be affected. You should do this. Even with me taking it with a grain of salt, I do accept that a lot of people may not take it with a grain of salt because just the nature of who I am, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So with teachers, they have to be aware that like bad moods or not, you're affecting your students and they are absorbing everything you are saying. And that is their experience in coming to the industry. So if you can be honest with them about the challenges, but what I really don't like is this idea that you need to shut up and take it. And that's what blacklisting is. That's the blacklisting fear, is like, you don't want to rock the boat or you'll be blacklisted. Studios don't like it when you speak out. You'll be blacklisted. That is ridiculously damaging to me. They don't understand. they're, the industry is different, maybe from where they worked, or maybe they're still in the industry or whatever. Like, I can't really look into, you know, every teacher. And I do respect, it takes, I taught too, believe me. I know it's a lot of work. And I know it's very, not always the best paid stuff too, you know? But unfortunately, like I said, like, if you take that position, that's sort of like the outcome. And by telling people to act how you acted, which was, you had to shut up and take it, you had to survive to get through, you had to do all the overtime and push yourself to get to where you are. There's nothing wrong with telling your students, this is what I had to do. You may have to do that too. Who knows? But I want you to make the choice. You know, yeah, the industry is garbage sometimes. I don't think we need to sugarcoat it. But I also don't think we need to prepare people to accept the shittiness. That's ultimately what it is. It's saying, the industry is garbage. This is what you have to do. There's no other way to do it. And it's just, it's teaching people to settle. Don't rock the boat or you'll be blacklisted. Well, what's rocking the boat? Do you want to explain? Why aren't you teaching people about their rights as a worker? Like, I just think about a world where students come out of school not afraid, but empowered to take on the challenges. And I haven't seen any empowerment. I've seen zero confidence and maximum fear.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. I feel like you've went over a lot of things that, like, professionals who teach or even teachers can kind of look for in their own actions when interacting with students. But, like,
yeah,
how would you suggest students kind of point it out to their teachers or mentors about certain vocabulary they're using?
I mean, it's tough because ultimately, you know, we are going to come up against people who have different opinions than us, and they're not necessarily going to budge. You know, like, someone coming up to me telling me that I'm wrong, like, on something that I'm passionate about, like this, I'm not necessarily going to go, oh, you're right, maybe blacklisting is okay. Like, I'm not going to do that, right? I would say it's okay for students. I think it's good to speak up. I think it's good to practice speaking up. I think it's good to see your teachers as your future peers. I think it is good to practice professionalism. So I think speaking up and calling someone out on their language in a, you know, respectful way is good, even if it doesn't give you the results you want, because you're going to need that skill when you go into the industry, because speaking up is important. All of the positive changes that my studio has gone through has been because people have spoken up and done it more than once and done it in bigger groups. So, you know, our voices are incredibly important, and you can start using them in school that way. Be like, you know, is there really a blacklist? Can you give me an example of someone who was blacklisted? What sort of stuff does get you blacklisted? If you're warning me about this thing, give me more details, right? Like, it's vague, and our brains sort of like fill in the blanks. And it's sort of like, you can call people out on it, but I think a really important thing for students to do is to surround themselves with other people with other opinions, because school can be a bubble, just like a studio can be a bubble, just like, you know, a community can be a bubble. And it's really good to reach out. And I think that's where, like, social media actually does help quite a bit, because there is more experiences to find other opinions. And I think there's a lot more people within the industry now who aren't on the sort of like, oh, you gotta be forged in the fire in order to succeed in animation. I remember when I pulled 7 all-nighters in a row. Like, we're learning not to glorify that shit anymore. So it's, we're getting to a point that it's becoming more common. And for students, it's just like, man, just get some people around you that feel that way. And then when your teacher says it, even if you can't change their mind, you got other people around you. So you're not a product of your environment, because I can't blame someone for feeding into that rhetoric when that's all they're experiencing every day for a few years.
Yeah, that's so true. You had mentioned like the, you know, I pulled an all-nighter, and I definitely remember in college pulling many all-nighters.
Mm-hmm.
And I've still heard people say that in the studios, you know, or professionals working. And yeah, it's interesting to notice that, that kind of mentality doesn't necessarily change. It just kind of evolves.
Yep. It's because it's where it's actually coming from. The all-nighters don't come from school. The all-nighters come from, we have the pressure to succeed and we feel like this is the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that will remain with us wherever we go. Just because you graduate and go to go to a studio, the way you work is going to be the same because it's ingrained in you now. Like, you're not going to suddenly work a different way. I mean, if you get training and stuff and you get a good mentor, you know, I would hope that you would learn some new skills, but it's something, the fear, the insecurity, the lack of confidence, that's stuff that we carry with us. And we just get more new fears when we go into the animation industry, right?
Yes. So welcome to my
yeah. Yeah, and it's true, and it's because like and when I said in like the other interview, it's like I had my problems and animation compounded them. Mm-hmm. Animation didn't make me into a more confident person. It made me into a person who actually was covering up the confidence because I was going, oh, I'm good at this thing. I'm good at animation. I have a thing now. But if you take that away from me, I'm not confident anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what that's doing is putting my power in a commercial industry, which is a dangerous thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think that's where, when you think about it in that sense, is you're going like, you're putting your power in a job. You're putting your power in an industry that is not healthy. You're putting your power in something that's not going to love you back, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But we're taught to put our power there because a lot of the times in school, and I'm not exactly sure why, but we kind of put animation up on a pedestal. Oh, look at this thing that you're doing and you're creating and whatever. And it's cool to be passionate about it, but like no one talks about like the job, your rights as a worker.
Yeah. Everyone says like it's an industry powered by love, you know, but I also think, and I probably got this from you. You probably said this at some point where, that's where they get you. That's where they can take advantage of you and your rights.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. Like it should not be an industry run by love. That's a bad industry. It sounds romantic. It sounds artistic and creative, right? Oh, it's a bunch of people passionate together, making a living. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I will say that I've been blessed to be on some projects that I do feel very passionate about. But that's not the structure of how a job should run. That's a bonus. The idea that this industry runs off of our passion and our love just shows, like, that's fucked up. It shouldn't. Give us decent rights, decent pay, and let me go home at 5 o'clock because I have other things to love. My love needs to go other places, like my family and my friends and myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that it's part of the culture for us to be like, see this as something that we ingrain ourselves into. I know people who work a ton and they seem happy and that's cool for them. It's not for me. I want to work a 9-to-5 and I don't think that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I'm not any less valid than anybody who wants to work 16-hour days and they're happy with it. I don't know how, but okay. You know, and actually I would say that I was someone who I thought, when I was overworking, I was making a choice,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't. I was driven by the need to succeed. I was driven by, I have to keep pushing myself because if I don't push myself, I don't have this thing that gives me confidence and self-worth, and then it will go away and then I will be worthless. So that was my core problem. And then the surface me is going, this is how I function. I'm making a choice to stay late tonight. No, I'm not. I'm fulfilling a need.
Yeah.
And it's a messed up need.
Yeah, I feel like in the same vein, because when I was a production coordinator, I was often writing after work and up till really late in the night. And like, no one was paying me to write those samples, but that was the only way I would break in as a writer, right? So I had to put time aside. But what I realize now is that, you know, I could have just not done this podcast, you know, and could have done it on the weekend, or like I could have taken other things away. And that's the other thing too, sacrifice, right? I felt like I needed to sacrifice my time and time to take care of myself, for my family, for my husband, or on all this stuff in order to succeed. And like, part of me still feels like there is a certain amount of that needed to, you know, make transitions or to break in with your portfolio. But I feel like I wish I realized that I could have taken my time more. Mm-hmm. And this isn't necessarily blacklisting, but like it just feels very similar to that same not wanting to fail feeling.
Yeah. Well, that's it at the core, right? Blacklisting it's just another way that we kind of project our insecurities and our confidence issues. And I don't really care about failing right now, or at least like, I don't know. I view it differently. Like for me, the definition I put on it is different than I guess other people. Like if I worked on a show and then everybody hated that show, I don't think I failed. If I run a crew and the crew has a bad time, but the show succeeds, then I failed. I feel like I failed then. But like we choose what that means for us. We choose what our best is. And that was something that was important for me, because I thought doing my best, because they're like, hey, just try your best. All you can do is your best, right? But no one talks about like what your best is. And a lot of people think their best is come hell or high water, right? Yeah, like my best is basically like, I come into work, I do a 9-to-5, I do a solid focus day, you know, I take my lunch break, and then I go home and I take care of myself. And that's my best. And because if I don't take care of myself if I don't leave on time, not to say I don't do a late night, I do every once in a while when I'm feeling cool with it or I'm feeling in a good headspace. But really, for the most part, my best at my job is different from my best at life. And the job gets what the job pays me for, which is an 8-hour day. And I choose what that looks like and what my best looks like. My best is not sacrificing myself. My best is not working all the time, because actually I become a shitty person if I do that. So that's not my best. You actually get worse work if I do that. Mm-hmm. So some people may think that's their best, but it's actually not. And we're allowed to define it how we want, what works for our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about the long term, because this career is definitely a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah.
And sustainability is a big deal. So if you're pulling all-nighters all the time, your work is going to suffer. That's just a fact. You know, you shouldn't be doing them anyways because you're not being paid for them. But yeah, everyone should really like define what like success is for them.
Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, they may not know what that looks like yet, mm-hmm. Which is okay. But that also means that there's no reason to overdo it right away. Figure it out. Just start at a regular level. And yeah, everyone's going to have points in their career where they do need to push themselves. Like, let's say you work on your portfolio and no one's biting, right? And it's been months. Yeah, okay, maybe you do need to push yourself to the next level. How do you get there? Well, it also certainly doesn't come from all-nighters, mm-hmm. right? It comes from, you know, scheduling yourself, making a lesson plan, getting critiques. Like, this stuff is a slow burn, and art, you can't force it. You can't just force it to be there one day, to be at the level that people are going to hire you. But everyone's path is different. Some people may get in right away. Some people, I work with a guy who I graduated with, and he didn't get a job for like 5 or 6 years. And then he applied and he got hired at the same studio, and he like rose through the ranks pretty freaking quickly, and he's great to work with, you know, and he's not any less valid than any of the rest of us. So, you know, a lot of the fear and this kind of stuff and we push ourselves because we're just afraid that we're going to fall behind. But there is no behind. There is no one way to get there. There's a million different, everybody gets here in a different way. You just don't know what that way is.
Yeah. So to wrap this up, like, what is your best advice for someone who's afraid of being blacklisted? Like, how do they untrain themselves to not feel that?
Educate yourself on workers' rights. Educate yourself on how to communicate with your superiors, people you work with. Because a lot of the blacklisting stuff, legally, you really got to go out of your freaking way to even be, like, fired, you know? There's, like, ends of contracts and stuff like that. And, yeah, sometimes maybe, like, someone's not working out and they're like, laid off. But to be, like, let go because of your attitude, or let go, or, like, blacklisted because you're not doing it. Like, oh man, you've really got to go out of your way. And there's still a lot of legal stuff behind it. People can't fire other people with no reason. Oh yeah, there's probation periods and stuff like that. But I would just say that the best combatant for fear is education. So if you're scared about something, learn more about it. Mm-hmm. And it will demystify it. And you'll realize it's actually a lot more nuanced than you probably thought it was, because most of these concepts that people are afraid of are very vague general concepts.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. I think that although the Animation Guild doesn't have jurisdiction outside of California, I do feel like they have a lot of information, at least under California law, where you can kind of see a lot of the rights that many workers receive. But of course, look in your area for specific state and country rules too.
Yeah. And then just connect with people around you, you know, and understand that the people you're going to work with in the studios are more like you than anyone else. I have met so many good friends through my coworkers, and I'm not one of those people who thinks, you know, I hate the whole, like, oh, work at the studio, we're for, like, family. You know, I would never, ever say that to someone, because that's silly. Don't ever buy into that. Companies are companies. Job's a job. They're paying you to do a job. They're not your family. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I'm very close with a lot of people I work with. And I'm very lucky to be actually very close with my bosses. And, you know, having people around you that you can, like, trust, be it in, like, your coworkers or your community or things like that, we have strength in numbers. Like, if you have if I learned of someone in Ottawa being blacklisted, there'd be a shitload of other people who probably know, and all of us would go, okay, is that sounds like bullshit. What, someone talked about unions and now they're being blacklisted? That's bullshit. You know, you would have people behind you. And that's what we really need, is we need our community. We need to feel safe in our community and have like-minded people. And I think a lot of us, when we go into studios, all feel like individuals. When we start, and it is a scary thing when you're new and you start, but just connect with people and learn about what you don't know, and ask questions, and be confident in being vocal. We need people to be vocal. We need people to come into this industry and shake it up and be controversial and to, you know, speak your opinion, because we've been stuck in this cycle. I think Andy put it a good way. He's the director I work with, where it's like, we, like, cannibalize each other. Like, the industry cannibalizes each other. Cause, like, we consume the stuff that, like, we learn from, like, oh, I lost to, like, 9 Old Men. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you have to learn about this stuff. And then you become a good animator, and then you're a good animator. And then what do you teach other people? The 9 Old Men. And then the cycle continues. So mm-hmm. we do that sometimes with education, but we also do that with, like, the culture of silence too. And someone's got to break it. And I want people to come in and make the industry different than what we've been using. I don't want people to come in to conform to the bullshit. And I think that's where a lot of the fear and, like, don't do this because of blacklisting, da da da. It's just teaching people to conform to the bullshit. And I want people to, like, smash the bullshit in the face and kick it. You know?
Yeah. The only way the industry is going to improve.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking. about this. I think it's going to help a lot of people.
Thank you for letting me ramble about this, because it's just, you know, it breaks my heart. I say it's heartbreaking, and it really truly is, because I have seen so many people with so much potential and so much talent who are sweet and empathetic and kind and just want to learn and just want to do good. And I see the fear eat at them, and I see them not speak up, and I see them actually leave the job because the fear is just too much. The anxiety is just too much, and they can't see their own potential through it. And it's just like, I think, man, how strong would this industry be? How many people have we lost, you know, to this stuff? It's a lot. We've lost a lot of people to this.
Yeah.
And it sucks. And it's only through talking and being honest and transparent about it are we really going to make a difference. Because if something like this can reach out just to one or two people who learn to go into a studio and then see something wrong that they don't like and bring it up, and other people also agree, man, they can make so many positive changes. And I know that's sort of a pie in the sky sort of way to think about it, because obviously studios don't always run like that. You know, sometimes you bring stuff up and it doesn't go anywhere. But I've been on the other side of it, where I actually have seen it pay off, and I've seen people be vocal, and I've seen them make some amazing changes in the community. And like, that's all I want for people.
Yeah. More than likely, if you see it, other people see it too.
Yeah.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Toons. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. Edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.